Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 25th, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I am back.
Yeah, do you think we even remember how to do a podcast?
I think this show is going to be like 14 hours long.
Do you think anybody's still listening? Did they all give up on us?
They might have after the episode 5 binge debacle. By the way, we will talk about that for a second here. I have no idea what happened. I still don't know. Even when I went back in the, like, because, you know, you grab the old shows, and I grabbed them off the description, or at least I thought I did, and all the other ones are fine, so why wouldn't a fifth one have been fine? And then you use it as a MP3, so you rename it something, and then you just import it into the editing software. So I have no idea what episode I grabbed then. I mean, I have no idea how it happened. I mean, just no clue.
Well, apparently it was one where I was talking about somebody getting 69'd out of the casino, so...
Oh, jeez. See, it was a little
So it wasn't twist. The episode people were expecting, but it just goes to show there are little gems in every episode.
It was just a twist, and, you know, hey, the streak, if you believe in the binge, then you believe in the streak, and it's still alive no matter what episode we put on there. It's just a matter of we had an episode, but we do have a link on the forum to the actual Raymer Show people voted for. If you do really want to listen to it,
so and that means right?
That means that gives us an extra week, so we can take a week off soon. Because once they listen to that show, that's a week where we don't have to do anything. So, I am back from Europe.
Yes, how was that? You were gone like 7-8 years. It seemed like
it
seem like I was gone that long when I was gone.
No. It actually flew by. I cannot believe how it was a month. I mean, 31 days away from my home is a long time. And I won't make it a long thing like Scott does. I'll make it quick. I get to Venice and I think to myself, hey, you know what? I think there are casinos here. I wonder if they have poker. I hadn't heard before they didn't have poker, but I said, you know what? It's like 10 years later. They bet you they do by now. So I look up on their website. They have poker. I'm like, excellent. So we were busy every day in Venice. I mean, we absolutely loved Venice this time around. Last time we only got to go for a day and a half because it was just a whim thing that we were doing. We had some open time left. So this time, we really did it right. We saw all of the sections of it. We saw the islands outside, you know, Burano, Murano, Torcello.
Did you see any canals?
Yeah, a couple. Those stairs are killer. But so I'm like, all right, on the last day, I'm going to go to the casino and I'm going to play some poker. And we had dinner plans that night. So I'm going to go in the afternoon and play some poker. Gene's going to go shopping. We're going to get a mask or something. You know, whatever. So I get to the building. Of course, I wore jeans and a nice shirt, but you have to wear a coat in these places. So they give you a coat if you show up. So I get there. And
kind of like the Friars Club for Seinfeld, right?
Yeah, exactly. I get there, and the casino opens at 11. I get there and I walk in and it's very interesting. It's like a castle or this huge, not castle, but it's like this huge 4-story building or something. And the slots are on the bottom floor and then there's stairs up to the table games and everything. So I get there and the guy's like, you know, how's it going? You know, we're speaking a little bit to each other, Italian. And then he's like, hey, I'm going to play some poker and I need a jacket. And he goes, poker? I go, yeah. He goes, it's not open until 3:30. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, the table game's at almost 3:30, and there probably won't be a game going anyway for a while or whatever. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I never got to play poker.
Aw.
I saw the casino, you know, I saw the slots, and it's a unique situation, but I never got to play. So I did have a poker story, though, so this was cool. Actually, first night on TV, you know, you're laying in bed, and you're still trying to adjust to all the... and there's nothing on TV that speaks English, but it doesn't matter because there's tons of poker on TV.
Interesting.
There's all the European poker players. I didn't really recognize anybody on any of these things. They were all Italian or whatever. So, but there was a lot of poker on TV. Very interesting. The graphics were pretty. Everything was pretty similar to what you would see here and stuff. So that was kind of cool. But the main story was we were taking a train from I believe we were going from Siena up to. The Cinque Terre, which is like the five lands, the five west coast, northwest coast of Italy. Beautiful, beautiful. All built into a mountain towns, and they all have beautiful water. We went swimming in the Mediterranean there, which is gorgeous. So we're taking the train, and there's this woman in front on the left of us, and she's got this beautiful little baby girl, and the girl keeps looking at me and smiling. And so the woman turns around and says, "Oh, you're making a friend, sweetie?" And the baby's name was Jordan. She's like, "Are you making a friend?" And so, like, you know, she kept looking at me and smiling. And believe me, whenever you're on public transportation, if you can make a baby not cry, you'll do it, right? Especially in another country. So it was hot. You know, everybody had the air. It was hot in there. So the windows were down and the baby was a good baby. I mean, the baby didn't cry at all, and it smiled whenever I looked at it. Whenever it looked at me, it was smiling. So I heard the husband.
It probably had heard that you screwed up the Raymer episode.
Yeah.
And it was like, dude.
Dude, it's international. You know, they have the Munson, now they have the Cosenza, you know. But, you know, she's smiling and everything. And so her husband, the woman's husband, is sitting in front of me. But he was kind of like, I couldn't really understand what he was saying, so I thought maybe he was Italian, because she was definitely from, like, New York. But I thought maybe they were coming back to Italy because his family was here or something. So I really couldn't understand what he was saying very much. And so, anyway, we take the entire train ride until we get to the Cinque Terre. And then you have to take another smaller train into the town that you want to go to once you get to their main station. So I knew exactly where I needed to go. I had a ticket. But they were talking about they were going to go on some different train, which I had never heard of. So I'm like, whatever they're talking about, I don't know what they're talking about, but I know where I have to go. So I go up to my platform with Jeannie, and we're sitting there, we're waiting. And I turn around, and there's the guy, the husband. So I turned to him, and I said, it looks like you're not taking a different train. It looks like you're taking the same one as us, huh? And he's like, yeah, he goes, my wife was here a long, long time ago, and they had some different setup back then. But, you know, so all of a sudden we start talking, and I hadn't said a word to him on the train the whole three-hour ride, whatever it was up. You know, I didn't say a word to him because I thought he was Italian, and he was in front of me, you know, with his back to me, so I didn't know. So we're just talking and everything, and I said, how long are you here for? And he says, 3 months. And I'm like, wow, you're in Italy for 3 months. Like, how long are you here for? I said, well, a month. He said, well, that's really good. And I said, yeah, you know, we're about 2 weeks in. And so we start talking, and he's like, yeah, we're rearranging our schedule. And he worked for some pharmaceutical thing or some big company. It was a big company, and he could rearrange his schedule and work from home. And so his wife was going to school or something, I don't know. So then he says, I'm going to try to write while I'm here. That's why we're doing like 3 months in Florence, but we're just taking a trip out here for a little while. And I'm like, you going to write a novel? He's like, yeah. So I said, oh, that's cool. I said, you have an agent yet? And he's like, no. And so we started talking about some of my experiences and the stuff that I'd written and stuff. And I said, yeah, I gave it all up though. I said, now I'm back in the journalism business. And he's like, oh, what do you do? And I said, you know, I'm a publisher of Poker Magazine. And he goes, which one? I said, Annie Up. He goes, are you kidding me? And I'm like, no, why? He says, because I was a poker pro for about 8 years, and he lived in New York, and he played underground games in New York, and he'd go to Atlantic City, and he totally knew about our magazine and everything. I was like, what? So here I am talking to some guy in the Cinque Terre, and he's like a pro. He was a former pro. He stopped playing because he had a kid, and he wanted stability or relationship, whatever, and he went into the business that he was...
Kids,
you know, educated. Really, I know. Exactly. But I mean, here I am, you know, 4,000 miles from home, and I wasn't even going to talk to the guy because I thought he was Italian, and then I didn't. But then I just, for some reason, when I saw him, I was like, oh, looks like you guys are coming on our train after all, and struck up this conversation. And this guy, so we started talking about Rounders, you know, and you know, and the Mayfair and all that, but he said he played in all those underground rooms, and it's not a big secret, you know, and he played online, and Black Friday hurt him. That was another thing that drove him to the legitimate world, or whatever you want to call it. But I couldn't believe it. Here I am, you know, in Italy, and I'm talking to a poker guy, and he knew our magazine. It was really bizarre. It was just really, really cool, and we ended up sort of making friends. I gave him my card, and I don't know if I'll hear from him, but his name was John, and if I do hear from him, you know, I'll tune everybody in. But the trip was great. We were in Paris for Bastille Day,
which is awesome.
Unbelievable. I didn't know we were going there for Bastille Day. It just worked out that the last week was lining up with that, and I didn't know until I was in line at the Rodin Museum to see Rodin's Thinker, and a guy standing in front of me, he's from New York. No, he was from Philly. And he's like striking up a conversation with me about something. I don't know. He saw a side door, and he's like, hey, I think we can get that door open, because the line was long. And he's like, so are you getting out of here tomorrow? And I'm like, no, why? He said, are you kidding me? You're going to be here for tomorrow's stuff? And I'm like, what stuff? He's like, it's Bastille Day tomorrow. I'm like, it's Bastille Day? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, what's Bastille Day? Because I know what Bastille Day is. You know, Rush has a song, Bastille Day, from years and years ago. So I knew, like, what happened and stuff, but I didn't know it was, like, their Independence Day. I just knew it was, like, a holiday. So it turns out they had fireworks that came out of the Eiffel Tower. It was so remarkable. The firework display was unbelievable. We went to their parade. We saw the president of France. It was unbelievable. We had no idea any of that was going to happen. We just went there to go see the normal Parisian, you know. and that happened. I couldn't believe it. So it was really remarkable. Really long trip. But I am glad to be back just because it's even though it's relaxing, it's very stressful. You know, you're in two different countries where a lot of people don't want to speak English or whatever. And
the nerve of them.
I know. But I am glad to be back. But it did go by quickly for me. And I did feel bad that Episode 5 was kind of a screw-up. I still wish I could figure out how it happened, but let's get into some real poker here.
Yeah, so we're glad you're back, and of course, 5 weeks off, a whole lot of stuff happened, yeah, unfortunately. And this show would be 7 hours long if we got to it all today, but we'll just tease you. We'll catch up, I promise, over the next couple of weeks with all the stuff that happened while you were striking up conversations in Paris. I was driving through the Deep South, so I got stories from there. Poker Stars got sold while you were gone.
Yeah.
How crazy is that? We're going to have American Poker Awards in February next year. That's a new thing that we need to talk about. And this week's excitement, we made an appearance on the show Hoarding Buried Alive. Not us yet, but maybe our storage unit at some point. But
yeah, I'm fairly certain we can get on that show if we need to.
But all that fun stuff we'll talk about on the next coming up show. And of course, we've got a cruise next week, so we got all kinds of stuff to tell you about from that. So, but of course, you know, we can't talk about all that because there's this little tiny tournament going on while you're gone called the World Series. And all kinds of stuff to talk about that. So I'm trying to compartmentalize this so we're not just off on tangents.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, I know you like to go off on tangents.
Yeah,
I never do.
We never do that.
Exactly. So I'm generally organized here. So we'll talk about the main event first. We'll talk about the overall event. And there's a couple cool stuff that happened in some of the events that we didn't talk about before you took off. And then, of course, we got to talk about this one drop guy because everybody's talking about that, and it's hilarious. So let's start with the main event. I'll just run through some stats here. First, 6683 people played in the main event. That's the most in 5 years. Six countries represented in the November 9. How crazy is this? U.S., Norway, Brazil, Sweden, Spain, and the Netherlands. And that's going to resume again on November 10th. Mark Newhouse goes back-to-back for November 9th. It's one of the craziest things ever. And then most of the Niners this year are relative unknowns with only small caches to their names. So, wow, what do you think about any of that?
Okay, here we go. 6683 is both surprising and not surprising.
That's exactly how I would say it.
Yeah, it's not surprising because we knew we were going to have more entries than there were in a long time. Right. But it's surprising because it's only 6683. I thought there would be more, right? Yep, we thought there'd be more. So that's remarkable. Six countries is pretty remarkable, although we have noticed that it's been upticking like that every year. It seems like there's more and more from around the world. So it's the same thing. It's surprising because it's six. It's, you know, it's two-thirds of the...
Can we actually hit 7, 8, or 9 at some point?
Yeah, that would be really cool.
I mean, six seems pretty weird, and I credit the World Cup. The World Cup was going on, so everybody like was all Americans were like realizing that there were countries outside of America.
Yeah,
and so now they want to see all these countries outside of America playing poker. That's what I think.
And how cool was that, that I was in Italy and France when the World Cup was going on? And, of course, I'm watching the World Cup final in my hotel room in Paris, sipping Earl Grey tea as I'm watching it and, you know, waiting to go, oh! So that was kind of cool. The other thing I want to say, Mark Newhouse is the greatest No Limit Hold'em poker player in the world. Okay, everyone's making a big deal about Dan Harrington and when he, you know, made the final table.
Granted,
which
was a big deal
was
then.
A huge deal then. But, I mean, this guy went through 14,000 people twice. I mean, you know, once 6,600. What was it last year? 6,000 or whatever. I mean,
or something,
I mean, it's like 13,000 people he had to get through to get to the final table. And he did it twice. I mean, just unbelievable. Unbelievable. How do you even figure out a way to do that? It's mind-boggling. I hope he wins it all just because...
I gotta say, I mean, usually I don't have a rooting interest, I mean, because I think there's a lot of good storylines. But this year, man, you know, if anybody deserves to win, sorry, the other eight people
there. Yeah, I know.
I'm sure you're all wonderful people, and you got families that are hoping you win, and friends and stuff, but this dude, I am rooting for this guy all the way.
That is just, it's easily the most remarkable World Series story. I don't care what happens with this Coleman guy or anything else, but I mean, this was just remarkable. Hats off, dude. Dude, you have no invitation to our home game. you can't even play in Florida. No, don't come back to Florida. Don't come to, that's it. Because it's just, I don't even want to be in the same state as this guy. It's embarrassing how bad I am compared to this guy. But yeah, you're right. I kind of like the idea that there are a lot of unknowns. And he's obviously not an unknown, but I don't think that if you walk down the Derby Lane here or, you know, Silks where you are or whatever and said, hey, you know who Mark Newhouse is? I bet you like 9 out of 10 still wouldn't know who he is. So I would, even though he was a November 9er and it's a huge story now, yeah. I think they are all unknowns, and I think that's good for the game. I think that you need to make names, you know, not just ride on the coattails of the ones who already established themselves. So it should be good.
Yeah, this is kind of my overall thinking of the World Series. I love to see these pros with good stories win some of the undercard events, just because it's good for the game. It's interesting, and you form a bond with some of these people, just rooting for them over the years. But when it comes to the main events, I think every poker player that like us or the folks that listen to our show want to dream about themselves being November 9. So the fact that people like us keep making it keeps that dream alive for a lot of us, even though lots of us haven't even plunked down the $10,000 ever.
Right.
I may never. But some of them are interesting, too. I mean, there's a foosball champion. And, you know, again, this goes back to what I think the World Series always wanted to do when they did the November 9, is kind of, sure, create celebrities out of these people, but really just, you know, show how interesting people are that play this game. And certainly, I think these 9 folks are going to help do that.
Very exciting.
All right, so overall stats for the entire series, it was a record for overall entries. 82,360 people bought into tournaments over the course of the 2 months or so. That generated a $226 million prize pool overall. Now, we've had 45 years of the World Series, so the total prize pool has been $2 billion. Over the course of that, and then our friends up in Canada dominated last year, right?
Yes.
10 bracelets. That was like sixth easily of the events last year. Shut out this year, none.
That's remarkable. How does that even happen? Couple of things I want to say about this. First, we say this every year. When they say record overall entries and record prize pool, we always say, yeah, but you added 5 events.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's just weird to call it a record. I mean, let's just say, for now, we're going to tally all the World Series of Poker circuit events into our numbers, too. Then you're going to really blow out the records, you know. So I don't really have any respect for records in this kind of thing. The other thing is I hate when they say, more than $2 billion has been awarded. It makes it sound like they're giving the money away. And it's not awarded. It's been redistributed.
Like Publishers Clearing House, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's been redistributed, you know. I put my money in, he put his money in, and he ended up winning.
So let's assume they said redistributed. Maybe I put awarded, so maybe it's not even...
No, they say it.
Plans get to kick your ass here.
They always say it. But
it's kind of staggering to think. $2 billion.
It is staggering that the industry...
I mean, it's still even... To me, it's just staggering that $225 million was... ran through that Rio.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in tournament entries, not counting the cash. I mean, that's just probably mind-boggling, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's funny because you just saw, I don't know if you saw this, but Casino Atlantic City just got knocked off for $180,000 or something like that. And so you just think about this. I mean, $225 million. I mean, there's got to be some kind of crooks out there that are excited about that, right?
You would think.
It's a lot of money, right?
That's a lot of money. And I never really understand how to read that stat either. It's like, is it actually $225 million, or is it like, you know, some of the money's being recycled back into it? So is it really a, well, you know what I mean? Sure, it's not.
I mean, that's just the
an
price
actual, yeah.
And so yeah, I mean, well, same with record overall entries. I mean, there weren't 82,000 actual people that showed up to play. I mean, lots
yeah,
of people played multiple
exactly,
events.
And exactly.
Re-entries and rebuys. There are lots of the same people in the same event, but still.
Right, so it's not physically 225. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like some of the same money keeps getting put back in.
Exactly,
so,
right.
But still, it is, it's a pretty big number. Pretty big number.
All right, so previous events, we'll do this rapid fire. I'll shout it out, and you tell me a quick comment.
Okay.
We'll move on, all right?
Yep.
All right, former world champ Joe Kata. Kata, I always miss it. Joe Kata.
Yeah, Kata.
One event number 32. That's a $10,000 buy-in, six-handed event.
Go. He's no fluke.
Yeah.
That's my comment.
Good, yeah. Hey, see, you. It's great to see these guys come back, right?
Yes.
No one-hit wonders there, right?
That's right.
Speaking of that, Dutch Boyd is back. He won his third bracelet in event number 33, a $1,000 buy-in, no limit hold'em event.
2 + 2 gets paid. That's my comment.
It's funny, one of our buddies, Stu, was hanging out with Dutch right after he won that and texted me. And what I love about the World Series is that, and poker players in general, is they're such night owls, right?
Yeah.
So I'm up in my office working at 6:30 a.m. Eastern time, and I get a text from, hey, I'm hanging out with Dutch Boyd, we're shooting bull. And I'm like, what are you still doing awake at 3:30 a.m.? So we're both awake at the same time on opposite coasts.
Jeez.
Pretty funny. All right, George Danzer wins the second bracelet of the series in event 38, $10,000 buy-in stud 8. Could be wrong. Was he the only two-time winner this year?
That I don't know. I'm not sure. But I know it proves one thing. Germans love David Hasselhoff. Okay, sorry.
I don't really know how it proves that, but that's kind of funny. All right, John World Hennigan won event 46. That's the $50,000 buy-in players championship. This is his third straight cash in that event and second consecutive final table. And, of course, that's an eight-game mixed event with, obviously, the best players in the world.
Yeah, he was the only good thing about Lucky You. He was awesome in that movie. Everyone else sucked.
Oh, I love it.
But I'm happy for him that he won the Chip Reese trophy, and he deserves any recognition he gets because he really is a good player.
Oh, boy. I can't believe you brought up Lucky You. It's funny because, you know, I just redid our pool here at the house.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And my dream is, I don't know if I'm going to make it work or not, but I want to install a big projection screen outside so we can have dive-in movies, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the Newsday 44, the Tampa Andy Up Poker Cruise, go to andyupcruises.com to book today. I used to like to invite, you know, some of our guests and then the dealers and staff to come over to the house the night before and have a party, right? So I kind of want to, if all this works out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ifs there, right?
Yeah.
I want to have a dive-in movie, but I want it to be poker-themed. And I don't want it to be Rounders because we always see Rounders. And I don't want to have Cincinnati Kid because I don't want to hear you whine, even though you probably won't come anyhow. So I'm thinking about what movie, and I would love for it to be The Big Blind, but, you know, I don't know how to do that because all I have is on a little DVD that Terry gave me. So I'm looking for suggestions of bad poker movies for that. So.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Lucky You might make the cut.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
All right, back to real stuff. Phil Ivey gets his 10th bracelet, event number 50. That's a $1,500 buy-in, 8-game mix.
He will own the record someday.
There's still no bracelets in Baccarat.
Yeah, that's a touchy subject.
All right, it's 7,862 players entered event number 51. That was a $1,500 monster stack. And officials had to add an extra flight to accommodate the demand. The winner, remember, a $1,500 buy-in, the winner took home $1.3 million.
So for $1,500, you could win $1.3 million. That is just unbelievable. It's unheard of.
Well, what I think is amazing about this, because once they announced Monster Stack, I think everybody got excited, right? Because we talked about this from the show before, too. The big knock in the World Series is you don't start with very many chips. You get good structures, but you start with, like, really no chips.
Yeah.
Right? And the Monster Stack, I think, started in with 10K or something like that. So it was almost like your normal tournament you would play in your local home.
Yeah.
And so that was one everyone would play because of that. And so I got to wonder, next year, are we going to see a couple more monster stacks? I mean, obviously, I mean, this is a yin and yang kind of thing here, right? Because, yeah, everybody's excited about 78, 62 players. That's a lot of rake for the World Series, right? But it also takes a lot of tables that can't be used for something else. So
that's true.
Do you add a couple more monster stacks next year and not run 65 events or whatever they ran this year and get people all jonesing for this for you? You're making millionaires. Or do you kind of just leave a one on here and just know that next year people are going to come out of the woodwork like they did this year?
That's the other thing, too, though, is there were 7,862 players because there was only one monster stack. You know, if you make three of them, then there might not
that's
be.
True.
So it's a fine line you're trying to walk there.
And the flip side is, if they do add a couple more monster stacks, it probably means fewer players for some of the other events, right? Which makes it easier for people to win a bracelet.
Bracelets, yeah.
See, look at that. You got a little flow chart there.
Yeah, that's
the stuff out.
That's right.
All right, and then, of course, Daniel Coleman was the winner of this year's One Drop, the $10 million buy-in event that benefited in part charity. And in my notes I said, it pisses everyone off. Or does he? So here's the thing. I'm sure everybody has figured this out or has heard about this while you're gone. He refused to give the media any interview after he won. Uh-huh. And then essentially afterwards wrote, I believe, a blog and just said, you know, hey, he doesn't owe poker anything. And, of course, some people are like, you know, yeah, you know what? He's right. Poker doesn't owe him anything. And if this is what he wants to do, that's great. And then he had other people, Daniel Negreanu, chief among them, that said, hey, I owe poker everything. And I don't understand why you can't even spend 5 minutes to give an interview to the media afterwards. And particularly in this event, which is, you know, such a signature event and benefits charity.
I, you know, being in the industry and being a journalist in the industry, so we're doubly interested in this, it's difficult to say that, you know, I would be upset, you know, especially if, like, let's just say that was going to be our cover story or something, you know, and then we're like, well, you're not going to talk to us? I mean, he posed for a photo at least. So, yeah, that as somebody in the business, the professional side of it, I'd be disappointed, and if I was relying on it, I'd be pissed. But, you know, as a human being, he doesn't have to. There's nothing in that when you sign up for that. You know, they may say on the entry ticket or whatever, you know, you're going to be subject to photos, your likeness, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But there's nothing there that says if you win or if anyone requests to talk to you from the media, you must talk to them. So, hey, he does whatever he wants to do. And you know, so I give him credit for standing by that and not. You know, I mean, if you're going to do it and take a stand, then take the stand. And he did. So, you know, whatever. I don't know. I mean, yeah, was I saying, was it Dickie's being a jerk? Eh, whatever. You know, I don't know. I mean, it makes no sense to me that he doesn't want it. What's his reason, you know? What's his reason? He won't talk to anybody, so we don't know why.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess my problem with it is if you have that attitude, and you're more than welcome to. In fact, yeah, unfortunately, poker breeds this. It's an individual sport where, you know, you take from people, and that's what you do in poker, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to feel like you give back to anyone. I just think it's unfortunate that those kind of people would enter this tournament.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that there's no other $10 million buy-in tournament out there. And so that's really cool. $1 million. I keep saying $10 million. $1 million tournament buy-in. And that's really cool. And, you know, obviously he won $15 million, which is almost impossible to do in anything other than the main event. So I could get all that. But you know, the whole charity aspect of this, I just don't think it's appropriate for somebody that doesn't really have kind of a charitable side to them or understand the significance of this event to enter this event.
Yeah.
I think it's a big miss for poker. I mean, this is a, you know, I'm not a cheerleader for, you know, the guy that put this together. I'm appreciative of it. But I just think it's a special, special event. And they go out on a limb to do this. They go out on a limb to put a $1 million buy-in, which is really tough. You don't get very many people. And, you know, people want to watch this to see who wins, but they also want to watch and see what kind of person you are for winning this. And then you got somebody in this event, and maybe there's other people that entered that didn't win that are just like them. And when he wins, it just deflates the whole thing for all the people that put all the time and effort in put the event on. And I just think that's unfortunate. I mean, there were 63 other events during the year that he could have won where no one would care at all.
Yeah.
Whether he just walked off in the sunset.
Yeah.
And he just took this opportunity to help all these people that are going to be helped by this charity and just kind of thumbed his nose at him because he just doesn't think poker owes him anything.
Yeah, you make excellent points. You know, again, it's still his prerogative, but it's like, why? You know, what's the big deal? And then he ends up calling attention to himself anyway by not doing it. So if you don't want the attention, then why enter it? You know, and if you do want the attention, then why be a jerk about it? So it is interesting. I mean, he does have that right, so I can't say he's wrong doing this, but it's just bad taste.
Well, I think the other thing that's unfortunate for poker players is, you know, we talk often about this, about how we struggle with the image of poker players.
Yeah.
In mainstream, right?
Yeah.
That all they are these greedy kids that never worked a day in their life and win and blow this money on champagne and limos and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And or worse, crooks and thieves and like that. And, you know, this is a tournament that's an opportunity for us to show how much we give back to the community. And, you know, had Daniel won this, again, I'm not a huge cheerleader of him necessarily either, but it would have been a different effect on the mainstream people about poker had he won.
Yeah.
Versus this guy.
Yeah. He's on fire, too. I mean, again, this year. He's just a remarkable poker player, and he's, you know, so outgoing, and it would have been great if he had won, but... Yeah, you know, to each his own. I'm just going to move. If this guy wants to move on, then that's what I'm going to do.
I'm going to move on. We're done talking about him. But a completely different kind of guy, and this was very, very unfortunate. Chad Brown passed away on July 2nd, and he had been battling this very, very rare form of cancer for, I think, upwards of 2 years, right?
Yeah.
And finally succumbed. And what I really, obviously, very sad, a bit huge loss to the poker community. But I always like to find the positives in a loss. And I think one of the great positives of this was just the outpouring of support leading up to it. I mean, I guess this is one of the, boy, I don't know how to say this properly without offending anyone. But when you have cancer, at least you know, you enter hospice at some point. And it gives folks, I guess, a couple of days to know that, hey, the end's near, right?
Yeah.
And really, it was a pretty remarkable 3 or 4 days that he was in hospice, just seeing the outpouring support on Facebook and other news organizations, and really got a good week to celebrate who he was, and capped off, obviously, by the World Series giving that gold bracelet and him actually seeing it. On video and actually getting the bracelet before he passed away. I mean, that was just, it was like a touching week, I think, for a very sad event.
It really was sad, and I did find out about it when I was in Italy, and I was just absolutely floored. And I knew that he had been fighting it, and I didn't really know how bad it was getting. You know, the last I had heard that he was still playing every once in a while and stuff, so I hadn't really kept tabs on how bad it was getting. And so when he finally did go, I was devastated over there. I mean, I was just floored. You know, we ran into him so many times. We got to be pretty tight with him, you know, from the tournament here to being out in Vegas to him being other tournaments around here, because he lived in Florida for so long. And when he was with Vanessa, she lived in Florida, so they were always in Florida tournaments. And you know, we got to be pretty tight with him. He knew who we were when he, you know, I saw him at the World Series. He walked by and say, "Hey, Chad." He'd be, "Hey, Chris." He'd stand up and shake my hand and talk to me, and we'd have a joke or two. And you know, when he was on our show that time, when he came to the studio, just, you know, you never know what someone's going to be like till you meet them. And then sometimes, you know, these people you think are going to be your hero and you don't like them. And then there's other people you're going to be like, you know, what's this going to be like? And the minute we met Chad, we knew he was a really good guy and he was going to be friends with us. You know, it was just, it's so sad that he's gone. And really to know, you know, how fleeting life is. You know, you see a guy like that, who, such a good looking guy, strong, athletic, pro athlete, and then something like this can just take it all away. And he's so young. He's in his early 50s. I mean, you know, some people will think that's not young, but that is young. You know, he could have had 30, 40 more years. And it's just, It's just so sad, and I am going to miss him. I'm going to miss seeing him at the events and at the series, and just you know, I was very happy with the World Series doing that, giving him that honorary bracelet, and because he'd come so close, and there was no doubt in my mind that he would have won one had he been healthy, and so I thought that was a real class act, and I was very happy to do that. And I wrote about it for our issue that's coming up. So very, very, very sad he's gone. Very happy that the World Series did that, though.
All right. Each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us a podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call of Florida Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is J Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Andy Up. Check out J Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And this comes from Michael Cantor. I haven't heard from him in a while, but he sent us a couple things. And he says, I played a Borgata Spring Poker Open event on Easter Sunday, which drew a pretty good turnout, and the rest of the casino was full as well. He says, I know you two keep away from religion, but to me, even though I'm Jewish, I can't say I was surprised. It was kind of weird to see it just like any normal day. I wonder if things are different in the South, where a tournament series schedules something on a major holiday.
I think they would. I mean, you know, we have like Thanksgiving tournaments and things like that, but those aren't religious holidays. That's not a religious holiday, so I don't. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't see any reason for not doing it. You know, if it's your religion and you want to respect that day, that's fine with me. But there are other people who don't have your religion or don't have religion at all, and they want something to do that day. And right. And there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to do something on that day. So to me, I wouldn't be surprised either by that Borgata turnout, and I see nothing wrong with it. And even if you are religious, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to keep the entire day for religion. It could be the ceremony. It could be what you do at the church. It could be what you do with family at dinner that time. But you got a few hours to kill earlier or something, so I have no problem with any of this.
I think he's probably right. There probably is a different sensitivity in different regions, and obviously points out the South, which is you know, commonly known as the Bible Belt. I would be kind of surprised there if any room there did very much on either Easter Sunday or Christmas. I know. I don't know all the rooms down here, but I know at least one down here, the only day they close every year is Christmas. But, you know, I can't really say if that's for religious reasons or just that.
No one's going to show up anyway.
Family reasons, you know, I mean, yeah, exactly. It could be that too as well, too, right? So I don't really know. I would think the bigger consideration, I think, for some folks is travel. You know, if you're talking about a major tournament series, which is what he's talking about here, you know, you're trying to get people to come to your casino from outside the area and stay there for the whole series. And if you put it over top of a holiday that's important to people, then you're going to lose some players that way, I think. Yeah. So it's almost a business reason not to do it outside of a religious reason. But interesting question. That's not our normal listener spotlight question.
Right.
So I kind of like it.
Okay, call the floor. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Antiup Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Antiup logo version. And use code Antiup for free shipping. This comes from Mike. He lives in Gardner, Mass. He says, I was playing horse in a New Hampshire card room, and a player who appeared to be a regular and perhaps somewhat visually impaired was in seat one. The dealer would turn to her and tell her the three cards and say things like, with a heart flush draw. And then on the turn would say to her, the jack and the hearts got there. In Omaha 8, the player would ask the dealers on the river whether there was a low hand, and they would answer yes or no. The dealers were not saying it to the entire table, just to this one player. Would I be out of line to say something to the dealer or floor?
Sam says, not good in my book. The player asks what a card or cards are, that's fine for the dealer to read them to her. However, the added information is very unprofessional in my book.
Yep, that's pretty succinct. I mean, there's no reason why you can't tell somebody what the cards are, but the little perspective on the hand is not right. The hearts got there, and Although, you know, one of the things that's weird is when you play stud, they're required in regular stud to tell you that there's a straight draw on somebody's board. That kind of drives me crazy.
I actually don't know the history of that, but I kind of want to go back and find out, because if you're right, they don't do that anything else.
Yeah, they don't even do it in stud 8.
Yeah.
Just stud. So it's kind of bizarre. But, no, I totally agree. Sam, right on the money. And I like that. It's nice and succinct like that, too.
Well, yeah, and Mike's direct question was whether he'd be out of line to say something to the dealer for. So, I mean, obviously Sam did say directly no, but you should.
Yeah, you should.
But I would say, yeah, absolutely, I wouldn't feel bad about that. I mean, it's tough because obviously he mentions the visual impairment, and we have this happen on our cruises all the time, you know, older players that can't see the cards, and, you know, you do what you can to get them into, you know, seats 5 and 6, so they're a little closer, but still, you know, you don't want to have them work at a disadvantage. But there is something to be said for not giving them information that other people aren't getting.
Well, you know, here's something else I wanted to... Do you remember Hal Lebarski?
Yeah, the blind guy, right?
Right, the blind guy. And I played against him a few times at the Mirage. We were playing one... I think it was one.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I remember telling me that.
Yeah, and he had his buddy with him telling him everything that's going on. And so, you know, hey, how do we know what that guy's saying in there? You know, we don't know what he's saying. He could be saying the hearts got there. He could be saying, hey, the guy in the 5 seat is, you know, so it's two people because he can't see. But you're not going to, what are you going to do? Tell the guy he can't be told? So what are you going to do? Have every dealer have to tell him everything that's going, every single thing that's going on? Or do you bring somebody along with you? So should this lady bring somebody along with her, you know, to sit behind
her? I don't know
whether
that would make it even any better.
I know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just bizarre. But you got to let them play just because they are visually impaired doesn't mean they shouldn't be able to play in your room. So you got to figure out something. But the added information is what's wrong there. So
yeah, I think actually the TDA rules actually do address physical limitations and trying to accommodate them within reason. Obviously, it's kind of an open-ended rule, I think. It doesn't specifically say what you can do because everybody's got a different limitation. Right.
Right.
But there is a belief in the poker community of trying to accommodate folks as best you can. I think really probably what happened here is this is probably he's in New Hampshire, so it's probably a kind of a localist kind of friendly room.
Yeah.
And we see these everywhere, too, where, you know, the dealers get to know the players, and, you know, unfortunately, they just... You know, this is commonplace, probably. And he's probably the only player there that thought it was weird, even though everybody should have thought it was weird. I think that's probably kind of what happened.
All right. I know you guys are jonesing for it. It's been a long time. Here comes a brand new episode of O'Malley's Move.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2 PLO8 game. This table is chock full of calling stations, so generally, we like to use our better post-flop play to our advantage. The table is 7-handed. We've already had to rebuy once, and we now sit with 300, down 200 for the day. The under-the-gun calls, MP calls, hijack folds, cutoff calls, and we're on the button with the ace of spades, ace of diamonds, 9 of diamonds, 7 of spades. We've got double suited aces, and although we don't have a very strong low draw, we're going to try to thin the herd a bit. We make it $20 to go. Small blind folds, big blind folds, under the gun calls, MP calls, cutoff folds, and we're going to the flop with $63 in the pot, and it's a good one. The ace of clubs, 10 of clubs, 6 of hearts falls. The under-the-gun leads out for $30, and the MP folds. This player is a bit of a wild card. He doesn't know much about the game, is a converted hold'em player, and likes to play lots of hands. He started the hand with $250. We want to make him pay to see any more cards. We raise the bet to $75. The under-the-gun thinks for a short time before calling. The turn is the 4 of clubs. This time the under-the-gun checks. This card sucks. It completes the flush draw, and any Yahoo hanging around with Trey Deuce now has half of our pot. We elect to exercise some caution and pot control, and we check. The river is the Jack of Hearts. Our opponent wastes little time in shoving. So if we call and lose, we're down to $50. What's the play?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. And our friend Montreal Dave is back this week with a, wait for it, pot limit hold'em.
Pot limit hold'em, jeez. You know, I was compiling the statistics for this issue, you know, of all the results and stuff of the World Series, and then there was a pot limit hold'em event, and I was like, why? Nobody plays this game, why?
Well, there's lots of reasons why, but probably not enough, because not enough people play it.
Yeah, it's not good.
Alright, so it's a six-handed, 1-2 pot limit hold'em. It's toward the end of the night, and there have been quite a few rebuys. I managed to spew one 200-hour buy-in, and now I'm on my second. He's on the button, and his stack is 400, so he's exactly break-even for the night.
So this is a roundabout way of saying he built it back up to 400.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
He says the game plays pretty loose pre-flop. He says being pot limited at all, lots of raising and calling. Which is true. Again, we talked about this before. For whatever reason, pot limit makes people go crazy.
Yeah.
When and no limit hold'em, you can bet the pot if you want to anytime you want.
And nobody does.
Yeah. He says the two villains in his hand, Elvis, who's under the gun, and Tubby, who's under the gun plus one.
I love these names.
I do. I mean, it's better than player A and player B, right? Who have been in every hand of the week ever, right?
Well, now I know why they're playing pot limit hold'em, because they're playing with Elvis and Tubby.
Elvis Tubby.
Thank you very much.
Oh, man. All right. So, anyhow, remember these guys are the two villains at hand. He says they are probably the best players at the table. And he says, don't mind the nickname. Tubby is actually the skinniest player of the game. Well, of course, that's always that way, right?
That doesn't necessarily mean that he's not. That's that he's skinny, though. Because, I mean, everybody else is really big.
He's the skinniest player.
Yeah, he's the skinniest of them.
400 pounds. Everybody else is 800.
Exactly.
He says, as a poker player, Tubby especially is a little on the looser side. He is capable of making moves post-flop if he perceives weakness, but for the most part, he's been playing pretty solid poker all night. Both Elvis and Tubby have more chips than I have, about 550 and 850, respectively.
Oh, pretty big game for a home game.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, home game, yeah. It was home game. I don't know why I was thinking it wasn't. But, all right, but in home. All right, all right, so remember, Elvis is under the gun. He raises to $3. Can you really do that?
If it's 1-2, right? There's 3 in the pot already.
Yeah, I don't know. But we'll go with it.
Well, there's 3 in the pot, right? If the blinds are 1-2.
But raises $3. Not, it says raises to $3. So you can't raise to $3.
Raises to 3. Yeah, you can make it 3 to go.
It's 1-2.
The pot is 3. Put a dollar in, it's 4. You can make it $3 to go.
No, but the pot's already 3.
Yeah. So if you
minimum raise, the minimum raise would be to 4.
Oh, to 4. Oh, 4. Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking that you were thinking it wasn't used
see,
too much.
See, this is why we shouldn't allow you to travel from. Got to completely retrain you.
Well, no, you don't have to bet pot, right? Oh, I guess.
No,
well,
it's not the pot, it's the minimum raise.
2 is the big bet. Yeah, okay. What's going on here? You can't do that.
All right, well, we'll run with it here. Raises the $3. Tubby calls the three. Player in between us folds, and now we're on the button with King of Hearts, Queen of Hearts.
All right, so Elvis was under the gun, and he raised a three. I'm not re-raising. This is a trap hand. I might call, but I'm not going to re-raise. This is a trap hand. I mean, I know we're in position, but calling is fine in position here because you want to see what unfolds, you know? Yeah, I don't think I'm going to re-raise here. King, it's a trap hand. You know, yeah. Under the gun guy, you could be raising with ace-king, and you got to hope you hit your queen. Even then, you could be behind kings. So, yeah, sometimes I even fold this hand, but I wouldn't fold this. I would just call it in, I think.
Yeah, it depends on kind of the history here. I mean, you're right. It's a clear trap hand. It's also a hand that can really flop well for you. Which is all the more reason just to call and do it. But if you know these players better and you know that you can take control of the hand raising, I don't mind, just as long as you don't get married to your cards and you're playing the person.
Right.
But my problem with that move is that these are the best players in the game, and he says the game's playing pretty loose pre-flop, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think you can really take control of this hand against those kind of players. So I would rather be the one that's trapping than gets trapped. So, yeah, you're right. I'm just going to call here.
Yeah. Yeah, we agree.
All right, well, Hero raises the pot, which is $9. It folds around to our two villains who both call. So we're three-handed going to the flop.
Jeez.
And that flop is the 9 of hearts, 4 of hearts, 2 of hearts.
Wow.
And boom, boom, pow, as they say, he says.
Boom, boom, who says that?
Yeah, I say Ricky Tikki Tavi.
Yeah, I say
pow. It's kind of cool, boom, I guess.
Pow. I never heard of that.
I would, it's almost like I'm ordering food at the Chinese takeout. Yeah, it's like a wonton, some steamed rice, and give me an order of the boom, boom, pow.
Well, normally boom, boom is associated with something that I would not want to eat, so you can pass on that boom, boom, pow for me. That's pretty gross.
All right, Elvis checks, Tubby bets $20, and before you tell me what you would do, he says, as Tubby bets, I look over at Elvis, and he looks visibly disappointed with the bet, checks his cards again, and makes a motion that he is going to fold. All right, so with all that information, what are you going to do?
Oh, wow.
Flop the second nut flush.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think I'd come alive on the turn. Right, because with the odds of the guy having the ace of hearts and another heart in his hand, and, I mean, if Elvis checked and was upset, and he really legitimately was upset, he's the guy that raised preflop. So if he had a suited ace under the gun, you'd think it's probably a pretty big ace. But since he didn't do it, what are the odds that Tubby has the ace of hearts and another heart? I mean, he could have a suited, a small ace, you know, and that's why he's just calling the hope it's a flush. But if he's got the nuts, why would he bet now? Unless he's convinced that, you know, we have something that's worth protecting or something. So it's hard to get inside both their minds. But I might call and wait to the turn. If the turn's not a heart, then I might come alive. So maybe I'll call to keep. Maybe Elvis will stick around and I'll get some more money out of this. I don't know. But I don't know if I'd raise, especially if it looks like Elvis is going to fold anyway.
Yeah, I'm just going to call here. I'm going to kind of walk the dog a little bit and hope that I'm not the dog being walked.
Yeah, yeah, hope.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hand of the week.
All right, so our hero does the exact same thing. He decides to call with $20. Elvis grimaces again. You know, I've never seen Elvis grimace.
Sure you have.
And he's a big dude, right? You know, there are some times that he just wasn't feeling well, but, you know, he always seemed happy.
Well, Grimace was the McDonald's character, wasn't it? That big purple guy that likes
shakes?
Well,
yeah, I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about Elvis. Who are you talking about?
No, I'm saying.
The big purple shakes guy.
They were both the same size. I'm getting confused.
I'm just saying Elvis didn't grimace.
No, but he had that snarl, which could be mistaken for a grimace. You know, that lip went up in the corner.
thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So there you go. There's your grimace.
All right, so Elvis grimaces again and calls for $20.
Uh-oh.
And here says, oh, well, my reading must be wrong.
Well, is that one of those fake grimaces where he's Hollywooden because he's already got the nuts against us?
Very well, could be.
Or is it he's, you know, I don't know what he could have, to be honest with you. But we'll see.
Well, the other thing, too, is you have to, I mean, it's good that you're looking around and getting visual cues from your opponents and using that information to decide what you're going to do. But you also have to be recognize the fact that people change their mind based on additional information that's presented to them, right?
Yeah.
So he might have been upset and ready to fold when this one guy called, but all of a sudden now you're in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was more money, maybe I'm willing to draw or whatever, you know. So I wouldn't necessarily say that his read was wrong. It very well could be just with the extra information that Elvis has now, he decided to call.
Hmm.
With the same crappy hand.
Yeah.
I mean, he's eating boom boom pow right now. All right, so we go to the turn with three players at $90 in the pot, and that turn is the 7 of clubs. So our board now has 9 of hearts, 4 of hearts, deuce of hearts, 7 of clubs. Elvis checks again, and Tubby keeps the pressure on, betting 50 this time.
Okay, so here's something to think about. Maybe Tubby has the flush already, but is it the nut flush?
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, because let me ask you this. If you had Jack 10 of hearts, would you still play it the way he did? Because you always say to yourself, well, you had somebody else has 2 hearts, and so you can't play that way, so you're trying to protect your hand. That's why he's betting. You know, so if you had, like, Jack 10 of hearts here, you'd bet it this way, probably something like this, some sort of story of this nature. So it doesn't necessarily have to, if he's ahead of us, then, you know, it's the one hand, and more power to him, we're screwed.
Right.
But there are many hands that he could play this way. He could even play a set of nines this way, or a set of fours.
Sure.
Trying to protect it against a single heart. So it doesn't necessarily have to have the flush either. So this is a very difficult hand.
Man, I play two pair like this, too. Not that I would have 9-4 or 9, any combination of two pair here, but yeah.
Right. But you could easily have four deuce. I've seen you have four deuce in this spot. So, I mean, it's possible. So, I mean, there are a lot of hands here that we can't eliminate based on his play and based on, I mean, would a pair of fours have called a $3 raise and called a $9 raise with another caller in between them? Absolutely, you know, preflop. So, absolutely. You know, same with a pair of nines. Would a pair of nines maybe just called a raise from under the gun? Yeah. So, would Jack 10 of hearts? Maybe. You know, it is pot limit on a hold 'em. So, yeah. You know, or even something like, you know, ace 5 of hearts could be there or something. So, there's so many hands here. I can't eliminate anything. You know, there are a lot of hands I beat, and there's only one that beats me. So, I don't know. I think I'm going to come alive here and probably bet, you know, pot. I think I'm going to bet pot. And if this guy shoves on me, then I'm going to have to make a decision.
Pot? That seems like a pretty big bet, doesn't it?
Well, let me ask you this. He bet. Well, he said 50,
I mean,
right?
Just because pot limit doesn't mean you have to bet the pot, Chris.
Well, hang on.
I'm joking with you.
I know, but really, if he has $50 as a bet, we would make it about three times that when you raise somebody. Usually you do that. That's 150. What's in the pot? 140? All right, so if he calls 50, then it's 190. So then you're betting, what, 240. So maybe not that much. Maybe I bet like 150 then.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
This is a real interesting situation. This is why we love poker, right? Because we feel like we flopped a monster, right?
Yeah.
But obviously we're concerned that somebody else had the one hand that beats us. The other reasonable assumption is that somebody has the naked ace of hearts, and if another heart comes on the river, then we're screwed, right?
Right.
So those are the two things that I'm trying to balance in my head. And then, as you're right, it's quite possible that this guy has some other combination. Though I would say at this point, I'm going to guess either he has a baby flush already or he has the ace of hearts in his hand. Just because if you had that set or the two pair to those other combinations that we were talking about, you're clearly going to make that flop bet and try to get people out. But when you get two callers after that, I think you got to give credit for someone having something at that point. I don't know whether I keep the pressure on. I probably just check and try to for pot control at that point.
Oh, okay. Maybe.
So I could be wrong. Maybe I'm playing too tight that way. But I'm narrowing it down to either the baby flush, which is fantastic, or just the naked ace of hearts, which is also fantastic, assuming not another heart comes.
But what about the other guy? That's the thing. If you just call 50, then he's going to have to call 50 with a naked ace of hearts. Whereas Tubby only has a baby flush.
Well, again, so I think that's the thing. This is what's so tough about this decision.
Yeah.
Now is you got to think about what's best for you on the river. So is it best for you to just call here, keep the pot manageable, maybe bring Elvis along, assuming that one of the two of these probably has the ace of hearts and you're going to have to fade that heart on the end. Or do you raise here to try to protect your hand and make more money that way?
You know, let me ask you something.
I think this case can be made for either one.
Yeah, and I agree. But you say manageable. If he bet 50 and I just called 50, and then Elvis called 50, there's $240 in this pot in a 1-2 game. It's not manageable anymore. Any bet after that has to be 50 to 60 or 100% of your stack after that. No one's going to check
for
that
us,
river.
Yeah, for
right,
us.
So it's not manageable anymore. I don't think. If you just call 50, then...
Well, you're still preventing... it would take a bet and a raise to get all in on the river. And I'm not saying I'm worried about that. Obviously, I've got second nuts right here. I mean, I'm happy to get my money in. So,
right.
What I'm not happy, though, is getting my money in on the river when another heart comes.
Right.
So, I mean, that's probably the reason to raise here and go ahead and try to get the raising war going here, and then you don't have to worry about being in that tough decision on the river.
Right.
Because I really don't know whether I can fold on the river even if that heart comes.
Oof.
So, I mean, I don't know if it's... I probably misspoke. It's not so much the keeping the pot manageable. I'm just wondering if we make more money by reeling Elvis in for another bit.
Maybe.
Because we raised a 150, like you said. I mean, if Elvis has nothing, he's gone, right?
Right.
If he still thinks he has something here, he might call the 50. So, you know, we make an extra 100 off of Tubby, but... We make 50 off of Elvis, so yeah, you'd make an extra 50 by raising, assuming Tubby calls. He doesn't raise, but what if,
See, if you bet 50 and he calls 50, you're only making 50 more, but if you raise to 150...
On this street, though, that's the thing, is now you got to think about how the river's going to come down.
Right, so you're only going to lose on the river if Elvis comes along. He can only be coming along with something that can beat a flush. Why would he be coming or ace high? So you're going to lose if Elvis comes along and the hand can get B at the end. So you don't want Elvis in this hand, I don't think.
Okay. You,
but I don't know.
No, but see, that's why we discussed it. I think you're right.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I think most people would say now is the time to raise, right? The turn is usually when you come alive. You've got, as you mentioned, a third person in here that you don't want in the pot. Not that you don't want them in the pot, but you want them to pay to be in the pot.
Right. And if you call 50, and then he's got 190 out there, 50 to 190, he's got almost 4 to 1 on his money. If he's trying with the ace of hearts, you know, he's going to call there. But if he's got, you know, who knows what he might have two pair, or he might have a set, baby set, like a set of deuces, and he's hoping to board pairs, you know, so he might try that too for 10 outs. You know, I don't know. He probably would. So you really got to make this guy, I think you got to get this guy out. Or make him pay, you know, I don't think $50 from him is going to be right. If you make it $150, I think Tubby's coming along, and you make even more money than keeping Elvis in, and then you might lose if he stays in. So, I don't know, but again, we could be drawing
dead.
We're
also assuming that Tubby actually has something, which I think, I mean, he could be just, you know, I would think at this point, I mean, is he going to fire a third bullet? Nothing. But if he has nothing, then you pick up an extra $50 from... Elvis, and then, well, you're probably not getting anything on the river unless you get beat. So you're right. Yeah. See?
All right, so let's raise.
We talked it out, and we decided to race.
Perfect. Yeah, let's raise to like 130, 150, something around there.
All right, our hero decides to raise the pot to 140, so we're at the same range.
Well, that's not pot, though. I think we got to teach this guy how to bet the pot, because when you say pot, it's not that.
It just must be the vernacular. It could be the vernacular.
So. Okay, because you have to put 50 in and then bet pot, so it'd be 100. And 90 more, so he'd have to put 240 in.
Right.
So he's off by 100 here.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, but anyhow, so he bet 140.
He bet 140, okay.
Elvis folds, as he says, Elvis has left the building. and with a slight hesitation, Tubby calls the $75 more. That's off, too. I would just say Tubby calls.
Yeah. Should
have been 90.
90 more.
All right. So we're heads up on the river, 370 in the pot, according to his math. And the river is 9 of clubs, so our final board, 9 of hearts, 4 of hearts, deuce of hearts, 7 of clubs, 9 of clubs. So now both get there. And Tubby bets pot, which puts us all in if we call.
Oh, jeez. The paired board now, too. You know, you got to worry about... A suited ace of hearts. Now you got to worry about that set that was trying to protect its hand. Now he's got the boat or quads. You know,
for my life.
Oh man! Wow. I don't know. I think I can let this hand go. I really do. I think I can let it go. I mean, at this point, well, according to his thing, we've lost what 170. No, 9, 20, 9, 30. Yeah, so about 170 at this point. We still have 230 left. To put 230 on, and now it's not even close to the nuts. It's like 10th nuts, you know?
I mean, really, now the only thing we can beat is a bluff.
Is really a bluff, or like if he thinks Jack 10 of hearts was still a great hand. That's the only hand we could beat that would maybe play it this way. Other than that, it's the suited ace or a boat or quads. I mean, is he really bluffing now? There's no way he's bluffing when we raise to him and then he comes out betting again. He's not bluffing. Because if we had the nuts...
I would say he's not bluffing. I mean, because obviously, let's assume, and we haven't talked about him at all, but if he's accurately put us on a flush, then he knows that this is a bad card for us.
Yeah.
Which is what we have, right? We have a flush, and we're concerned about making this call, right? So, I don't think the fact that he... I think this is an excellent bet on his point. Part if he thinks that we had a flush, because it really, it obviously puts us to the maximum test. Now it's up to him whether it's worth, you know, that 231 that he had a bet to try to win this pot. But you know, according to the math presented here, 370 in the pot, so I would take that shot.
So let me ask you this: do you really think that you would have called what we think is 90 more if you didn't have the nut flush there? Just to hope the board paired so that you can represent a boat before he gets to bet? I don't know. That's a lot of money.
Well, you see, that's what I'm saying. The fact that we raised, I think, to him would indicate that we had the flush, and now that the board came paired, all the more reason to make this kind of bet.
Hmm.
If he doesn't have the boat. I mean, so yeah, so I guess that's the weird thing, is if he has a boat here, would he really... Although, but really, to be honest, 370 the pot, really his, when he says pot, he's really only betting our stack, which
right,
is 230,
right,
which is what you would bet on the river for any holding you have, right? So this is kind of the rub of pot limit, is that you can't get a proper read really on what somebody's doing because you're kind of limited to what you can do here.
Yeah, I think I can get away from this. I it just feels the way this guy, he bet out, called our raise, bet out, called our raise, bet out. I mean, I just, it's not a bluff to me. Why would he pick, why would, you know what I mean? To me, it sounds like he thinks his hand is good, and it's got to be better than ours. It just feels better than ours. I just can't imagine not having at least the best flush possible, and maybe even now a boat. You know, if you had a set, let's just say you had a set. Let's just go back to the beginning real quick. I know it's getting late, but let's get back to the beginning real quick.
I got nowhere to be.
All right, we got pocket fours. All right, yes. And we're tubby. And Elvis raises under the gun. All right, we're calling that because we're set mining.
Sure.
We call. We raise to nine.
Particularly because it was less than a standard.
Yeah, it was standard. Exactly, exactly. Now we're getting a bargain to set mine. So somebody raised to nine, Elvis calls. So now again, we have to call a six more because it's worth it. There's 30 in the pot now. We set mine. We hit our set. Be great. Flop comes. We hit our set, but there's three hearts. So the guy who raised pre-flop doesn't even do anything. He checks. Now we have a set of fours, and we want to protect our hand. Do we not want to protect our hand from another heart? Because we say to ourselves, well, the odds that somebody just flopped a flush. We don't think that way. We say, if they had a flush, we still have 10
outs. Protect slash value. Yeah,
right.
Right. Yeah.
So
we're
exactly.
Definitely betting there with that.
So
sure.
We're betting. So then somebody just calls, and then another person calls, so we're ahead. So, okay, we're thinking they're just calling. Either they're really slow playing the nuts here, or we're ahead and we're doing great. The turn doesn't help anybody. The guy checks again to me. I'm betting to protect my hand again. I got a set. I got to protect this set. I bet 50. Now somebody raises me. All right, so is he raising me with a flush? If he's got a flush, I got 10 outs. Let me just call him because I still have outs to beat him if he has the flush. What does he do? He just calls. Now, he could still be doing this with the nut flush, too, because now he's slow playing it and hoping against the boat.
Right.
But the boat gets there. He's thinking, would this guy really have been betting the boat, or is he betting the, you know, king of hearts this way? Who knows? So when the river comes and it does make the boat possible and he bets out, I still think he would do that if he had pocket fours. He'd have a full house now. So that would be, we'd be behind. If he had a nut flush, he might still do that because he didn't think that we have a boat because of the way we played it. So, I think we're behind, and I can fold. If I had this much time to think about my hand in the home game, I think I would fold. I don't know if I would take this much time, but I think I would let it go.
Well, I think what's interesting about how you just went back through that hand is that whether he had pocket fours or pocket nines, let's see, any of the sets, or the ace high flush, he would have played it the exact same way, I think.
Very good. So, we're behind. I think we can't win. I
aside from maybe his flop bet, if he had the ace high flush, maybe he doesn't. But
The only other hand I could think of would be Jack Ten of Hearts, and he just doesn't believe we have a boat. He believes that we were drawing to the hearts and didn't get there, and or something. It's the only other thing I could think of, you know, like King Queen with the King of Hearts or Ace, whatever. But if he has a nut flesh already, he'd play it this way. He could play it this way. And if he has a boat now, he's definitely playing it this way, because now he's not even worried about the flush. So
yeah.
I think I can let this go and save 231 in this game, which apparently is pretty big. So I think I can get my money back if I play right.
The more I think about it, I don't think Tubby makes this bet with the ace-high flush on the flop. So it's possible, but it's less likely. So now I'm thinking even more likely, you're right, that we're behind here.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so our hero says, as I'm thinking about my decision, Tubby starts talking. Big mistake. All right, that big mistake was my part. Tubby says, do you have trips, a flush? Our hero remains silent. Then he shows me one card, the Jack of Hearts.
Ooh. Ooh. That's a smart card to show if he has the Ace of Hearts. And it's a stupid card to show if he has a Ten of Hearts. So we know it's on a boat. That's killer. Yeah, I'm still folding. Why would he show me the Jack of Hearts unless he has to have the Ace of Hearts? He doesn't. Obviously, we have to have something that beats a Jack High Flush to do what we're doing. So why would he show us a Jack Hearts unless we have like 7-8 of Hearts? And he's trying to make us fold. Why would he make us fold if we had 7-8 of hearts? So showing the Jack of Hearts is a bad move, really. I thought it was a good move, but really now that I think about it, it's probably a bad move. Because there's no hand that I'm going to go, all right, except maybe Jack 10 of hearts. And if he had the 10, why wouldn't he show the 10 of hearts? You know what I mean? So
interesting.
It feels like it's the Ace Jack of Hearts, and it's a bad, that's a bad card. He shouldn't have showed anything. He should just
kept the mouth shut. Anything. Exactly, right, yeah.
The only way I would show, if I had the Ace of Hearts, I might show the Ace of Hearts to make him think I was drawing and I'm bluffing. But even then, you're putting that, okay, I'm beat in his mind, then he's going to fold. So I wouldn't have showed anything. That's not a good move. Nope. At first I thought it was brilliant, but it's not, actually. I fold.
All right, so here says, very interesting. I can now take full houses out of his range. I'm befuddled. Does Tubby have Jack of Hearts, Ten of Hearts, or Jack of Hearts, 9X, both of which I beat? And think he's best? Is he bluffing me with a missed straight draw or pocket tens, jacks, queens, or kings? Again, all of which I beat. Or perhaps he's taunting me into a call and he has ace of hearts, jack of hearts, which beats me. I'm kind of with you. I think, I kind of worry about the future gene pool by anybody that shows a card. Anyhow,
yeah,
so
yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say he has had the ace of hearts, but it'd be unlikely that he doesn't, right?
Yeah, it doesn't seem right. He has to have it, I think.
Alright, so we decide to fold, because I go over the play in my mind and decide he probably has a nut flush. I fold. He flips over the ace of hearts and says, good fold.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That was a bad move on his part.
Probably cost himself 231.
Yeah, I wonder if we would have called there if he hadn't done that, but wow, that was a good hand. That was a real good hand. I mean, the numbers were wrong a little bit, and I think we got to know what betting pot means, but that was a very interesting hand. You know, it started out, I was like, but you know, because it was pot limit hold'em, but it ended up being a really good hand, and I think I would have gotten away from it in the end. And I don't know how I would have played it differently either. I think I would have just called pre-flop. That's the only difference I probably would have made.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, it's a cooler hand, right? So so maybe you're right. I think really the only thing we could have done is call. But even if we just called on the flop, we're still in the same situation as get to the river.
Yeah.
Because that money's meaningless towards the pot.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, at some point, you know, the only thing to do is be good enough to realize this guy has the one hand that beats you.
Yeah. Ah, brutal. And sorry for the cooler.
He shows one. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry for the cooler.
Well, he saved himself $231 by folding at the end, so, you know, that's a successful cooler.
Yeah.
When your whole stack doesn't go in.
Yep, absolutely. You lost the minimum, I think. You may have lost the minimum. And since you didn't bet pot the right way, you're saving more money. So.
Yeah, probably the only way you're going to save more money is just calling on that turn. but I think we talked about that. That doesn't make sense. So.
Yeah. And then the other thing, too, is if you had just called preflop, then the amount, the size of the bets might have been smaller, but that's just stupid stuff. So.
Pretty small, though.
Yeah. All right, good to be back in America. Next week's going to be a good show, too. Got lots to talk about. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.